copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Well, it's an honor for me to be asked to speak on the topic of clear vision, clear results, and about how we can understand the power of a vision in church planting. I speak out of my experience. I speak out of a tested time in church planting in Norway. I planted the church 10 years ago, and I've followed the same line as I set out to follow in year 2003 when we wrote down the vision for our church. I believe that the clearer a vision is, the clearer the result will be. Those words I quote from the pastor of the largest church in the world, Yonggi Cho in South Korea. He says that the clear vision gives clear results and the unclear vision gives unclear results. And I'm sad to say that I think that many ministers stick with the unclear vision because then it doesn't hurt so much to have unclear results. I believe that if we want good results in church planting, then we need to know where we're aiming for. And I always say that there are many ways to build a church. There are many models out there. But if you build a church, you need to choose one. We have not had more options of how to do church than what we do now in the contemporary church. There is so much innovation, so much new language, so many new models. I ask everyone that joins our church to believe in the three M's. And the first M that I ask people to believe in is our motive. We are here for the kingdom of God. This is not about our career path. It is not about us trying to find some success or be cool. This is about the motive of building the kingdom. The second M that I ask people to accept is the M of our model. We build a congregational church, which means that we will meet on the Sunday and we will meet in the life group on the Wednesday. Now, those two we draw from the book of Acts chapter 2, 42 to 47, that says that the church met in the temple and in the small group, in the house. And we believe that those two pillars are important. Now, those two breeds the methodology of how we build church. That means that we have a certain focus on how we build leaders, certain focus on what we celebrate, certain focus on what a week look like, a month look like, and a year look like. So the three M's that we have is very important to talk to people about, because that gives us the ability to carry a vision, because people need to believe that the vision carrier has the right motive in what we're doing. And in addition to that, that we are able to continue on building the church in the model that we believe in, because there are many, and after the methodology that we do. Now, some of us are built in our personality and in our style in a certain way that that draws attention. People will say it's a charismatic leader. People will say it's they have natural appeal. Some people will say they are extroverts. And some of those traits are, in the marketplace of this world, of course, very attractive. But sometimes that makes some people feel inferior, because if you're introverted, if you don't have that communication skill, and if you don't, then you feel maybe, you know, how can I find my vision? If we go to the Bible together, we can see that there are several biblical examples of how a vision becomes clear to people. Isaiah, the prophet that we know from the Old Testament, now he met God. And because he had a meeting with God, he received the vision for what he was going to be about in his life. For Isaiah, it was the meeting with God that initiated his vision. Nehemiah, on the other end, was in exile, heard the rumors of the walls of Jerusalem that were torn down, and he was downcast, and he cried, and he was in sorrow because he saw a need that he wanted to meet. Now, the need that he saw that he needed to meet was connected to the destiny that God had in his mission, in his journey. So he had a need that was connected to God. because there are many needs in the world. And the United Nations and political states and NGOs, they all work in a wonderful way to meet needs. When we talk about Nehemiah, he found his vision because he saw a need connected to the mission of God in the world. Moses grew up in Pharaoh's house. He came into a slaved group in Egypt, understood his own heritage. But he was hesitant to take responsibility to free the Israelites. But when he met God at the burning bush, he didn't just meet God, but he also met himself. He said, "Who am I to do this?" The grand task of taking on leadership. But he got his vision through being surprised by God. Joshua and Caleb, just spoke on them a couple of weeks back in our church. They stood at the border of the land of Canaan, and they had another perspective of what they were going to go into than the other scouts. And they were the two guys that were able to be taken into the promised land just because they had faith. Now, their way to get a vision was that they had a faith perspective towards what they were going to do. And lastly, Paul, probably the greatest giant after our Lord Jesus Christ in the New Testament. Everything can be traced back to the road to Damascus. It was then when he met Jesus in the light, in the bright day, he met Jesus, and everything in his ministry can be pointed back to the meeting of Jesus. Now, we could have continued on talking about this, but my point is this. There are many ways to get a vision. Let's not make it so narrow that we only say that there are certain ways to do it. There are multiple ways of getting a vision. You're an expert in your own life and in your own ministry, so I think that you should be able to find that in a certain way. How do we then formulate the vision? Well, I will argue very strongly that every vision should be written down with words. Things that are written on paper commit ourselves a lot more than spoken words. Spoken words can disappear. Spoken words can dwindle. You can negotiate spoken words. Written words commit ourselves. That's why in Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 2, it says, "Write it down so that it's easy for people to read it and that people can run with it." Now, that's not a direct translation in the English language. The English language is my second language. But the point is this, that when he wrote down what he saw, other people could commit to it. And in organizational steering of a church, in recruitment to a church, in the teaching of a church, it helps a lot that people can read what your vision is. It helps people commit to your church. And we have to remember that we live in a consumer-oriented market. Most of the people that we are reaching are used to sitting on the internet, choosing what they like. Going through the mall, choosing what they like. Going to different types of churches, choosing what they like. And there are multiple models, and we are never going to say that you can't do this one and you can't do that one. We just need to be one of the models in the marketplace of models. And I'm afraid that that language always can destroy some of our perspectives. Let's not get into that discussion, but the point is this. It helps people commit when they know what the church is all about. And it clarifies the picture for the future. So the future picture is so important for us to keep alive in people's lives. When I was younger, I used to say, you know, you have to believe it to see it. And I would preach that, and I would actually believe what I said myself. But the older I get, I understand that most people actually have to see it before they believe it. Most people have to see an example of the church I want to build. And then when we go home, let's remember now what we saw. That's why I tell the church plant that we have going on north of our city now. I say you need to spend the first couple of minutes in all the gatherings just talking about that we will see 30, 40 children in the children's school, a children's church. We will see a parking lot full of people. We will see bicycles when we come in. Imagine, because we need to clarify that where we are now is not where we are going. Because people fall in love with where we are now. research shows that many of the people that join a church of 50 are not there when the church is 300. Because what they committed to was 50, not 300. What you see is what you get. That's why we need to help people see what we will get. Because most people let their eyes stand in the way for the real eyes of the heart. Because it is the real eyes of the heart that is the most important thing. A constant vision helps motivate and inspire people to how we go about building the church on a day-to-day basis. Often I've had to come back to the written statement of the church that we're building when I've been distressed. Some people have left. Attendance is down. We have a challenge and conflict happening. I would need to come back to what is written down. And then it ignites me to keep on doing it as I committed to a number of years ago. So how do we then communicate this vision to the people? Every time we do a membership class in our church, and I'm very fortunate that we have had this as part of our culture for a long time, that we ask people to attend a membership class before they attend our church. A couple of years back, 30% of the people that attended the membership class chose not to be a part of our church. That's very good. Because if you have a popular church, a church that draws a lot of people, a place that people like to belong to, but they have other thoughts about how church should be, then you will have a challenge down the road. If I am going to fly home tomorrow, I get to Krakow, and I read on my ticket, and the ticket says Oslo. I go into the gate, and the gate says Oslo. And I get into the plane, and the pilot says, Oslo, I cannot raise my hand and say, I want to go to Bergen. Because the destination is already clarified. Most churches experience this, that people that have another model preference, another heartfelt passion, will come into the church life and they start arguing the model that we're in. It helps us a lot to get people on board with the vision and get some people off the plane that don't want to go where we're going. It helps leaders be accountable for the direction. I'm sad to say that a lot of us, we instead of aiming and hitting the target, we move the target. That's why in oral communication, I try to every semester have a vision night in our church, where I in late August and in late January, I will give a whole Sunday to preach a message about the vision of the church. And during that time, I will not talk about something new that we're doing. I will just reiterate what we are doing. I will talk about who we are and what we're about, enlighten it with some fresh new stories, and make sure that what we're talking about during that time tells people that we are about what we said we are about. We are continuing on with the vision that we are building. Another way of doing this is to make sure that we write out the vision in a very good way. Now, many of us that have planted new churches have been very mesmerized over the fact that vision statements should be very short, they should be very cool, and they should be very eloquently formed so that people would remember them. Most people are not smart enough, and most languages are not rich enough to come up with poetry in a vision statement. So what I say is this: why don't we just write out a vision statement over a few paragraphs, and then you pull some things out of that, and you make some slogans, and you make some words to remember? Because a vision statement doesn't have to be beautiful, that's not the point, but it needs to say what it must say about the direction of the church. So our vision statement is a couple of paragraphs. I think you can write it up to a half a page A4, and I think it should last for about 30 years, a vision statement, and then it's probably time to look at a small change. For organizational steering, I use the vision of our church well. Some of you are familiar with the organizational quality control system. Now, that's a corporate word, but most people understand the wording in it. Every year, I will have the department leaders of our church participate in the production of a visions manual. So they will take a one-page A4 page, and they will write out worship ministry at Saltbergen City Church. The children's minister will write one-page worship ministry, children's ministry at the Saltbergen City Church for every major sector of our church. We will look at a one-page description of who we are. We will not change that every year. We'll change a little bit of names that we use, and we'll tweak it a little bit, but the essence of it is still there. They will then write into that visions manual the goals and the strategies for the next four-year period. That means that our visions manual is published once a year, and it is a living document written by the people that actually do the ministry. It's a 70-page thing that we hand out to all of 130 leaders every January, just to make sure that the organizational steering of our church happens in line with the vision. So when I write the annual report of our church, I write it under the main categories of our vision statement, so that the vision says, and then the result says. And then I read the annual report for my church. Now, I know this is technical language and it's boring, but we sometimes in church life, we need to be boring in order to be on track with what we're doing. And with that many departments that we have after 10 years, we need to do it in this way. So, how do we create ownership to the vision? I have meters of leadership literature at home. I have an okay understanding of trends and sociological phenomenons and anthropology and all the sciences. We love them. But you know what? We cannot build churches based on the sciences of this world. We need to build them on sound theology and on sound ecclesiology. That's why I say that underneath the main and core practices of what a New Testament church is, majorly drawn from Acts 2, 42 to 47, where we find that the church should be concerned about evangelism, preaching of the word, the fellowship of the saints, prayer, baptism, communion, worship, doing good deeds. Those core practices decide the direction of any local church, if it's whatever denomination it is. That is the Missio Dei. That is the God's mission in the world. That is how a church should function. Now, then we have a local vision, but that needs to submit to the grander mission of God. That takes the aim away from us. We don't make ourselves interesting by having some cool vision. It is really about us leaning on the greater mission that God has asked us to do in this world. That's why we need deep roots and theological foundation, because I find that there are so many great ideas in the world, so many trends that come and go, so many cool things that people read and see and like, but you know what? We will lose in that market. We don't belong to the forces of the market. We are Christian churches, and we need to be stable in the ground, and we need to be built on an ontological argument of what a church is in the beginning. I'll spend my last minute talking about the development of a vision. I believe that the leader of a church planting team should be the main architect for the church planting vision. I have a hard time with the idea that we're going to come up with something in a team. That might be due to my tradition and that I come from, but I would say this: if it's something that keeps you awake at night, if it's something that keeps your heart pounding very hard, if it's something that you can't stop talking about, if it is something that you cannot forget, you just burn for it, if it's something that breaks your heart, if it is your burden, well, then I say this, I say, you're close to the vision that you have. And what I did, I can only explain what I did when I wrote down our vision 11 years ago. I spent quite some time on it, writing down some key words, trying to develop some sentences, trying to work it out so that it made sense in the clearest possible way. I've worked on several different vision statements for other organizations and things like that after that, but I always come back to, is there a burden? Does it keep me awake at night? Can it break my heart? Do I feel the passion? Well, then you are close to what your vision is going to be. Thank you. I will now open up for questions, and you are free to ask your questions right now. The question is, how do we maintain the momentum for church planting on a high level when the speed is slow? Is that correct?
Yes.
I think that's a very good question. When it comes to momentum, momentum is very delicate. Because when you lose momentum, it's very hard to get it back. That's why we need to take care of momentum in church planting. That is the reason, on a personal note, that we are 10 years now as a church, and we have started 2 more churches, and I'm in the process of starting 2 more just in my city, because I want to build off the momentum. When we still remember how we did the first one and the second one, I want to do the third one. I want to do the fourth one. Because if I go with the momentum, I can plant many churches and have an exponential growth. But if I would wait now, we would lose the energy. I think you need a sense of urgency when you plant churches. Now, this is the business writer. His name is John Carter. He writes for Harvard Business Press. He wrote a book called A Sense of Urgency. And he said that all great companies have a rush towards success. That's how they keep the momentum going. Now, I won't borrow everything from the business world, but let's go back in to the preaching that we have in the revivalist evangelical tradition. When we talk a lot about that Jesus is coming back soon, it tends to increase the momentum. When we preach a lot about, we have 7,400 places that doesn't even have an evangelical church. When we talk about those numbers and when we increase the burden on the people and we increase the sense of urgency, then we have a chance of increasing the momentum. I think momentum must come from people that are being mobilized and understanding. You said some things in your questions about missionary and missionary presence, and I think sometimes... I don't know enough about this, but sometimes missionary presence is not just all good when it comes to the issue of momentum. Because if missionaries have a task for a term in a city, then they can see their term and that's what they're doing, and they can lose some of the multiplication that you actually need, the mobilization of the people of the city and the people of the nation. I don't know about the Spanish context when it comes to that, but that's something to be aware of. And who are the church planters? That's another very important question. I think that you need to create a farm system that says that you develop the church planters before you cast the vision for the church planting. So in my church right now, I have 11 people. This is only our local church. I have 11 people that I have trained for a year. So they are ready before we launch church planting. I have the leader before I have the church plant. Often we want to do the church plant before we have the leader. And then we lose momentum. Because in this day and age, when you launch something, people want something to happen. Because we are future oriented. The stocks for Apple go up if they set out a rumor that something new is happening. In this generation, everything is about what's coming. And we need to make sure that we are ready for what's coming. That's a way to build momentum. That was a long answer. Any more questions? Okay. Then I say thank you for your attention.